Good evening, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Terror Radio Podcast. If this is your first time joining me, then welcome. This is a podcast dedicated in bringing you the best of horror and thriller, old-time radio broadcasts, as well as original stories. I'm your host, Keith, a.k.a. The Radio Show Nerd, and forgive me for the delay, but as we all know, life has a way of throwing you a curve, but I'm here today. Tonight's episode is called Scorned. Now, what's that old saying? Hell has no fury, then a woman scorned. But when it comes to men, forget hell. Heaven, hell, earth is completely destroyed. So, without further ado, this is Terror Radio. The two radio series highlighted tonight are Beyond Midnight and The Weird Circle. Our first radio play is called Borneo, and it was first broadcasted on Beyond Midnight, May 5th, 1969. Following that is the radio play, The Niche of Doom, and it was first broadcasted on The Weird Circle, February 2nd, 1944. Now, you all know the drill. Sit back, turn down the lights, and listen to Borneo, followed by The Niche of Doom.
And a very good evening
Hello,
to you.
Warwick. Well, well. What'll you have?
What'll you have?
Okay. On you, then. I don't mind.
Fancy somewhere a bit quieter. Like over there in the corner. Got a story to tell you.
Oh?
Remember the story about Mendingham you told me? I've got as good a one to tell you. Been hoping I'd see you. Had it straight from the filly's mouth, so to speak. The usual? Frank, double scotches, two, please.
There's something ghoulish in your manner this evening, Warwick. You're going to try and scare me?
Listen and see. Ever been to Borneo?
Biotex, the new soap and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight by Michael McCabe.
Okay, fire away. I'm all ears.
I won't make the obvious remark. One thing, my story, it isn't for sale. Well, what I mean is this. It's given today free, gratis, and for nothing, friend to friend. But you don't make 200 guineas out of it by selling
it. I'm not that hard up for a yarn yet, Warwick. Carry on. Interest me. Your story?
It's a wild tale. Two planters, interior of Borneo. And as usual, there's a woman. A veritable golden-haired filly. Only her mane is streaked with grey. And there's a great livid scar or weal right round her neck. She's the wife of George Thring. At the other end of the triangle is Clifford Macy. The men were partners on a small experimental estate far up in the interior. They'd been at it for 6 years and were about to reap the fruits of their labours very handsomely. And then Thring went on home leave and came back with a bride. Her name was Rona, And that was the beginning of the trouble. Macy flirted, philandered, and then fell violently in love with her.
Come here, Bert. Don't be scared.
What bird?
A bird. Why give it a name? A bird's a bird. A tree's a tree.
No, Peter. Just... How strange. You've been here 6 years and you can't call a bird by its proper name. Is it a long-tailed cloppet or scarlet speckled ditch hopper? Or... Have you a cigarette?
Hmm. Miles away. It's all right.
All right for you.
We won't be back till tonight. We've got all the time in the world.
Peter.
I ought to plug that bird, wouldn't I? He messed up our little scene. All right, relax. You're sweating. What's... Oh, sorry, madam. Perspiring. But you can see I wasn't brought up like you. Decent with tablecloths and pretty china and a vicar to tea on Sundays. Oh, Verona.
You don't do things by halves, do you? When you drink, you want to fight. And when you love...
I go all out. Marry me, Rona.
I've already got one husband. I'm not a mormon.
Oh, you know what I mean. Let's clear out.
Plantation.
The plantation can go and...
You'll be sorry tomorrow morning.
Never.
All that money. I like you, Peter.
Thanks.
And I know what to be friends with you.
Look, the other night on the river, that was more than friendship, Rona. Oh, the words you said then. The worlds we inhabited. Friends? Friends, yes, we were friends, but more. Or were you pretending, playing a game?
No. Yes, no. Peter, I don't know. I can't decide.
Well, that's too bad. You've got to.
Don't shout.
If I want to shout, I'll bally well shout.
Well,
are too busy sorting out their own love problems. Rona.
I want to finish my cigarette. Do you like a drink?
No, I don't want to finish your cigarette. I don't want a drink either. I want...
She fell between two stools, you see. So many women of a certain type do. She began by being just friendly and kind, cheering the lonely man up, and drifted into the eternal game of all womankind, flirting. And then? Well, too late she realized she couldn't put the fire out, either hers or Macy's. Fling was, in many ways, easygoing, but at the same time, possessed of a curiously intense strain of jealous possessiveness. He was generous, too. If asked, he would gladly give away his last shirt or crust. But let him think or feel that his rights were being taken or curtailed, and he was a tough customer with rather primitive ideas. Macy made no attempt to hide his feelings. The woman was sitting on a volcano. For her husband, of course, became suspicious. He watched, though, with the cunning of an iguana.
Frighten me.
All right.
Oh, rain. Slowed down the work on the plantation, hasn't it? Would it lose us much money?
No, not much. You're not looking well.
Looking well?
I said not looking well. You know, darling, this rain is spell. It's getting us all down. Why don't you go home for a while?
Home?
Yes, my love, home. Hampshire in June. Can't you imagine it? It's only been 18 months. Long, cool evenings on the downs, the sea at Bournemouth, concerts at Portsmouth. Oh, Jack wrote to say the Royal Philharmonic is coming.
George.
Oh, you love music, Rona. There's no chance here. Only the gramophone.
Why should you think I want to go to England? No, it's just... Just this eternal rain. I'll be all right when it's over. Well, the rain is a...
Darling, your health comes first.
Oh, my health is perfect.
You look pale. Then you're...
I've known you to be so solicitous, George. Why you...
Now, don't stay here out of duty to me, my dear.
Please. George, let's not talk about it anymore.
Ah, I see.
You see?
Borneo, the jungle. It's captivated you. Won you completely. You couldn't bear to be away from it. Is that it? England. Dreams of her rolling hills and green dells gone forever.
Oh, I wouldn't put it like that. I'd like to go home one day, but...
Or is it something else?
What?
Something else that you... don't wish to leave at the moment.
George, I assure you, it's merely the weather...
Or someone else. Yes, that's it. My goodness, of course. How could I have been so blind? It's someone else. My poor little Rona. How you must be
George,
suffering.
I'm in no mood for play acting. I'm going to bed.
Rona, please don't turn away. I'm talking to you. Rona? Rona, I said please do not walk away. Your husband is talking to you.
Tonight. I didn't think I'd ever...
I won't keep you long,
like
Angel, but there is something I think we ought to sort out.
Well?
My darling, I am going to ask you a question. I have a little suspicion, you see. If I am wrong, I shall fall upon your feet and kiss them and be your slave forever and beg your forgiveness.
George, please, what is all this?
Are you having an affair with my partner, one Peter Macy? I'm sorry, darling, did I speak too softly? Perhaps you didn't hear me.
I said... George, you must be mad.
I have watched month after month. I have watched our worthy friend Macy become more openly amorous. I have seen secret glances. I have seen the way the looks that have passed
George,
between you.
True.
The looks have become less and less.
House.
Less guarded. Neither of you even care anymore. You treat me like an imbecile.
You're mad.
Admit it, Rona. Admit
no.
It. Admit it.
Leave me alone. I want to go to bed.
Admit
to
that you've been deceiving me with Macy.
George, this has gone too far. All right, I'll go
tell
to you.
Tell me.
Yes, yes, yes. We're lovers, yes. Been lovers for 4 months.
So, like a blithering and sublime little idiot, she admitted it was all true. And after the initial outburst, Thring took it like a lamb. In reality, he must have been burning mad, a mass of white-hot revenge. Unbeknown to either Rona or Peter Macy, he plotted his revenge. And it must surely go down in the annals of affairs such as this as one of the most diabolical ever contemplated. Came a lull before the storm. Fate played a hand. Macy went sick with malaria, really ill. And George Thring had to admit the necessity for Rona to nurse him practically night and day. Macy owed his recovery to her care. But even so, convalescence was a long job. In the end, Rona too crocked up through overwork, and Thring had them both on his hands. This was an opportunity better than he could have planned it. It separated the lovers and gave him complete control. The rains were over. The jungle had ceased wintering and spring was in the air. The young grass and vegetation were shooting into life, new life. Concurrently,
All the creepy, crawly insect life of the jungle and plantation was young and vigorous and hungry, too. These facts gave the husband the germ of an idea which he was not slow to perfect. An idea as devilish as man could devise. In Borneo, there is a kind of a mammoth earwig.
A thing as fine and gossamer as a spider's web. As long as a good-sized caterpillar.
And it lives on waxy secretions. These are integral parts of some flowers and trees and lie buried deep in their recesses.
It's one of the terrors of these tropics, because it moves and rests so lightly on a human being that one is practically unconscious of it. And, like its English relation, it has
a decided liking for the human ear. It was a terrible plan, to put the giant earwig in Macy's hair, just above the ear.
Once in his ear, it's a 1,000-to-1 chance against it ever coming out the same way. It would be impossible to turn. To back out would be an impossibility. And so, feeding as it goes, it would crawl right across inside the head.
Surely the rains aren't coming back again, George, are they? I don't think I could bear it.
No. That's just the old storm having a last blow. It's all over. It's spring now.
Oh.
Don't worry, sweetheart. It's all over. Oh, well, I must go and minister to our other patient. Don't you want to know how he is?
How is he today? He should be pretty well recovered by now.
Oh, he is. He is. Said only yesterday he can't wait to get back to work. I must admit I shall be glad. There's a lot of work he's doing right now. This is the year when all our pains are awarded.
I think I'll get up tomorrow, George. I can take some of the burden from you. Must have been awful for you, having two invalids around the place.
Well, don't mention it. Those closest to me are sick. What am I to do?
Several days passed. Renathring began to nurse Macy in the last days of his recovery. It was late afternoon. Spring was really in, as they say. Borneo spring.
It'll be dark soon. Bats are about already. They're fruit bats, aren't they? I must light the lamps for you.
You care well for me, Rona. I wish I had you with me all the time.
Oh, please, Peter, don't say anything else about all that. We must try and forget now, because...
But...
What's the matter? Peter, what is it?
My head! My ear! Merciful heavens, my ear!
That was the beginning. Rona did all she could, but there was nothing to see. Nothing to treat. Then for a while, Macy would be quiet, because the earwig was quiet. Then the vile thing would move or feed again, and... Spring came each day to Macy's bungalow. He was very helpful.
Here, drink this, old man. I think this is the best way to take the drug. It's foul without water.
Unbeknown to the wife, or the lover, of course, friend Thring had cast the dose of pain-relieving drug down the sink, and Macy was swallowing plain water.
This way it dissolves, and you can't even see it.
George, we've got to get a doctor.
I know, but... Well, you know how many miles that is away.
No, it's okay. It's just migraine. When I was a child, I used to have headaches. Wait. The doctor's too far. Miles and miles away. It's impossible. There's too much work here.
George, we'll have to get the labor and we'll have to be carried down to the coast to the doctor.
Rona, come here a minute. Darling, we can't lose him. The malaria and this thing, he's not strong enough. Not yet. The moment he's gained a bit more strength, we will. But I promise you, it could kill him if we took him now.
And so the work on the plantation went on. Rona nursed her former lover. Her husband went about the task of running the plantation. The laborers labored, the sun shone. And in the small darkened bungalow that was Macy's, its occupant lost weight and suffered the agonies of the damned. Gone now were all thoughts of love, illicit or otherwise. He could summon up no interest in the lovely, golden-haired woman who was constantly by his side. The drugs were having an effect, because, of course, when she administered them, she did the job properly. Strangely enough, Macy didn't connect the relief he felt when Rona gave him his drugs to complete failure of those drugs when the husband played nursemaid. During the days that passed, an awful lot of creepy crawlies down the plantation drainage system must have died. Their supply of pain-killing medicine must have been near to running out, too, when the end came. Again, it was late afternoon. Dusk was just falling. Bats were flying about, and they were heavy with fruit returning home.
Too much. I can't take it any longer.
Both Thring and Rona were present. Macy must have suffered an excruciating pain, followed by a period of quiescence. Then, feeling a slight tickling sensation on his cheek, he put up his hand to rub or scratch. His fingers came into contact with the earwig and its fine gossamer hairs. He naturally was curious and looked to see what he was holding. Slowly, he realized.
What an escape. What an escape.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Only Thring kept quiet. And that, of course, was a mistake. This silence worried Macy, weak though he was. He looked from Rona to George Thring, and at the critical moment, George Thring could not meet his eyes. The truth was out. Macy threw the insect, now dead from the pressure of his fingers, from him, tried to rise, and then fell back. Slowly, George Thring walked to where the earwig had fallen, picked it up, and studiously examined it. And from his pocket, he produced a magnifying glass he used daily for the inspection and detection of leaf disease on certain plants. As Rona watched, she saw the fear and disappointment leave her husband's face to be replaced by a look of cunning and evil satisfaction. Then, for the first time, he spoke.
Macy
looked up. Thring held up the earwig.
This is dead now. As dead as my friendship for you. As dead as my love for that creature who was my wife. It's dead. Dead. But it's a female. Do you get me? This earwig is a female. And a female lays eggs. And before I put it in your hair, it was...
Touched your drink, cook, old man.
Huh? Oh. But what? I mean...
Oh, there was nothing anyone could say or do. Friend Macy made to get up and then fainted. Rona ran screaming from the bungalow. Her husband followed, snatching as he went a long Borneo native's knife from the wall. He caught her and slashed her, marked her neck. She's got the scar to this day. I think I'll have another whiskey.
But, Macy, what...
Well, he died, of course. No doctor could operate. The thing had laid eggs in his brain. Thring was tried for his murder. The wife, Rona, told everything to the authorities, but nothing was believed, of course. I mean, the story could never have happened, could it? She is a pretty wretched creature today. Her husband is hopelessly insane, so they say. Anyway, he's in the lunatic asylum for life. So, there it is. A waiter, two double whiskies and sodas, please.
Beyond Midnight, next week, we're broadcasting The Room. This is a rather frightening tale in the great tradition of ghost stories. The room in question is in the north wing of a house owned by a certain Mrs. Watts. The house has been in her family for many years, and the room in the north wing has a very terrible reputation. No one who has spent a night there has been found in the same condition as they went in when the door is opened the next morning. A duke, a well-known ghost hunter and dabbler in the supernatural, slept in the yellow room, and the results were terrifying. Before the great window was blocked in, one poor inmate jumped to the ground below to his death. Mrs. Watts herself has never dared spend more than a few minutes there. But she's an old woman now, and by her own admittance, she can't bear the thought of dying without knowing just what it is that haunts a person who spends a night in the room. Consequently, she offers £1,000, and Ronald Todd takes up the offer. The haunting of Ronald Todd is eerie and inexplicable. And at the very end of the story, there is a surprise which might anger and puzzle, but will certainly intrigue.
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.
The past will return and the stories of yesterday unfold. Listen to the Weird Circle.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Niche of Doom.
Will it never stop, this constant tapping inside my mind? Yes, I've listened to that same hopeless tapping for days on end. I thought it would stop when I came to this rest home. Here in my room, my husband sits on the edge of my bed, watching me, knowing my thoughts, feeding me horror, tearing at the fabric of my mind as a spider tears the wings off its prey. My husband, August Marais. My husband, my torturer. My captor, my murderer! A woman has a right to live, to laugh, to smile and be happy. A right to love and be loved. And I was lonely. I remember the day I was in the patio attending to my tulip bulbs, talking to my maid Rosalie as I spaded the earth.
Oh, madame, the garden looks just beautiful.
Yes, it does. I love this garden, Rosalie. It's the one thing in this entire dreary house I can call my own.
If the tulip bulbs work as nicely as they did last year, perhaps Monsieur Marais will allow you to enter them in the garden contest.
I meant to ask him.
Good day, Josephine. How are you feeling today?
Well, I feel fine, August. I didn't expect you so early.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir. Anything I can do for you, madame?
No, nothing, my dear.
Yes, madame.
You're looking very well, Josephine. Very well.
August.
You've something on your mind? What is it?
August, I was wondering if you'd mind frightfully if I entered my tulip bulbs in the annual country exhibition.
Mind? Naturally, I mind. You know very well I don't like you making an exhibition of my name in public.
But August, just entering the tulip...
I will not discuss it.
But it's so lonely here all the time.
Lonely? Nonsense. You've the maid for company?
Yes, I've Rosalie.
And I manage to spend one evening a week with you?
Yes, I know you do.
My dear, you should be very grateful that you have the position in life which marrying me has given you.
I have everything but happiness, August.
Happiness is relative. A girl born in the circumstances in which you were born, a poor, unimportant family, certainly cannot expect everything.
But I ask so little, August, just to exhibit the bulbs and the flowers.
I thought we were not going to discuss this anymore. You know very well the doctor told me at my age I'm not to allow myself to become excited.
Yes, I remember what the doctor said.
I'm glad. Please remember it. And now, my dear, I really must go over to court.
Will you be home this evening, August?
I'm never home on Tuesdays, Josephine. Enjoy yourself, my dear. Don't wear yourself out in the patio. You country girls are always lovely while you're young, but you age so quickly.
Age so quickly. He frightened me. I saw all the years of my youth passing me by as I was caged up in the house in the Rue Montmartre. I was only 15 when I married August. 15, and he was 55 then. 5 years of marriage had taught me the meaning of loneliness and tears. A woman has the right to bask in the warmth of her youth. That's why I left the house that day. I wandered out into the garden patio outside my room, and I walked down the boulevard to Grinnell's Cafe. I sat down at a table on the sidewalk, intending only to watch the others, to watch life pass by. The waiter was very friendly.
What will you have, madame?
An ice, a raspberry ice.
A raspberry ice. Excellent, madame. Excellent for a warm afternoon.
How angry this would make August.
Sitting all alone, madame?
Well, because I wish to be alone.
Oh, no, you don't. Not when you've the opportunity to enjoy my company.
Please, sir, I shall call a waiter.
No, don't, please. You're lonely and I'm lonely. Certainly there can be no harm in two lonely people sharing a table for one short half hour. Now, can there?
But my husband...
Even a jealous husband can't object.
Really, sir?
And you are lonely. You really want me to sit down, you just won't admit it. Oh, I can see the truth in your face.
You see things that are not there.
May I, madame? Just for one half hour.
Well... there really is no harm in it, is there?
None at all. Thank you. Of course, madame, you know that I've lied to you.
Lied to me?
Your ice, madame. Something for you, monsieur.
Oh, same as the lady.
Oui, monsieur.
Nothing like raspberry ice to start a lifelong friendship.
What do you mean you've lied to me?
Well, I didn't just happen along just now. I didn't just happen to see you sitting here and come up. I planned everything very carefully in advance.
Oh?
You see, madame, I live across the way from you. I've watched you gardening in the patio of your home many times.
But why, monsieur?
Why? Why, because you're a beautiful woman. Because I wanted to know you so very much. Because I've seen something in your eyes that I've felt inside myself.
You shouldn't, monsieur. You really shouldn't say these things to me.
My name's Pierre Planton.
Monsieur, for both our sakes, do leave me now. You've no idea how much trouble this innocent little adventure might cause us later on.
Oh, I've waited a long time to meet you, dear lady. Not just a day or a week or weeks, but a year.
I'm very flattered, Monsieur Planton.
Pierre's the name.
Pierre?
You know, the first day I saw you in the garden, I asked my servant who you were. And when I found out you were married, I resolved never to try to see you again, but...
Why did you change your mind?
I saw your husband.
August is a very fine, upstanding man.
He told you so himself, eh?
Why, no, I really think so.
He's an old, garrulous, stupid bore who's overwhelmed with his own importance.
Oh.
Frankly, my curiosity's aroused. Why did a lovely young girl like yourself ever marry him?
Well, I loved him.
Oh, madame. Please don't cry, please. If there's one thing that turns my bone to water, it's a beautiful woman's tears. Here,
I'm not crying.
Oh, here, use my handkerchief for these non-existent tears, then.
Thank you.
Now, Josephine, smile.
Stop ordering me about. I won't have it.
Please smile at me and say I'm forgiven.
You're forgiven.
Oh, that's better. I promise to be nice. You see, Josephine, believe it or not, I'm very fond of you, against my better judgment. You'd better believe it, because I'll haunt you every day if you don't.
And that's the way it started. Just a talk in a sidewalk cafe. My first friend, perhaps the only friend I had besides Rosalie. At first, Pierre and I thought we were just playing at love. But by the end of the second week, I knew the truth. I loved him. I loved him as deeply and as truly as any woman could. We met in the afternoons in the cafe, and in the evenings when August was out, he stole into the patio and we talked. Talked of him and of me, and then of us. Of our future together. It was Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, that he was supposed to arrive at 9 o'clock. Rosalie was helping me dress.
You'd better hurry, madame. You'll be here in half an hour.
How do I look, Rosalie?
Beautiful. I wish I were as beautiful as you. Oh, madame, put this brooch in the front of the dress. It sparkles so.
Yes. Yes, I think I will. Rosalie, he's so handsome and so fine.
And you really and truly love him?
Really and truly.
But what will you do, madame?
I don't know. If I could only be honest with August, if I could only tell him and break away.
Oh, madame, he'll kill Monsieur Pierre.
Yes, I know, and he'd be well within his rights. I'm so frightened sometimes. So very frightened.
Oh, madame. Listen, footsteps. That's August outside my room.
What will you do?
I don't know. Perhaps he'll leave before Pierre.
But if he doesn't,
then what? Then you must pretend that Pierre's your friend.
Oh.
Well, look at my lovely wife tonight. Dressed up, aren't you, my dear?
Good evening, August. I always dress in the evenings, you know that.
No, I didn't. I shall hereafter take more advantage of your loveliness.
You flatter me, my lord. I didn't expect you to drop in to see me this evening.
Were you expecting someone else?
Why, how unfair you are, sir.
Unfair? No, I'm, shall we say, more curious than unfair. You may leave, Madame Rosalie.
Madame, I...
What's the matter with you, girl? Why do you stand there staring like that?
Well, it's the... Rosalie's expecting a visitor in my patio shortly, August.
A visitor? Yes. Rosalie?
Yes.
Well, that's different. A lover, eh? I suppose you'll be getting married soon, eh, girl?
Well, yes. Yes, yes,
yeah, I suppose. Ah, more's the pity. Mind if I sit down, little Josephine?
No, do, my lord.
I suppose you'll be leaving, madame, and myself shortly. You should have told me, girl.
Well, I had...
You what?
I didn't think, monsieur.
If you'd told me, I'd have supplied you with a decent dowry. A girl in your position can scarcely afford a trousseau.
It's very kind of you, monsieur, to offer me.
Well, my dear, no matter what, I shall be generous to you and offer your future husband a fair dowry anyway. What say you, Josephine? Is that not generous?
Very generous, my lord.
Ah, yes, it is. My girl, Rosalie, you shall be married in the Marais Chapel at noon Friday.
Friday, monsieur? So soon? 3 days?
Yes, Friday. A girl in love should be delighted at the prospect. Unless you've lied to me.
Lied to you? Oh, never, monsieur, never. I'm delighted. Delighted.
Yes, of course you are. Well, Josephine, you might help the young lady plan her wedding while I'm gone. And make a list of all the necessary items which you'll need.
Yes, my lord.
I shall leave the entire proceedings in your hands. That ought to keep you well occupied.
Yes, my lord. Are you leaving me so soon?
I have to, my dear. You know these Tuesday nights. You know them very well. Good night, Josephine. Give my best to your suitor, Rosalie, and tell him I'll do my best by you.
Oh, madame. Shh. Careful. August can be sly as a fox.
Friday,
yes, Friday. Rosalie, he's very clever. I don't know how he found out, but he knows. At least he suspects.
What will we do, Mother?
I don't know. There he is. Tell him to come up, Rosalie.
Yes, madam.
Come up, monsieur.
Is old Spider-Leg gone?
Yes. But hurry, monsieur. Hurry.
I climbed to my love's balcony.
Oh, darling, darling, darling.
Here. August is clever. He knows.
What? He knows? He told you so himself?
He came in this evening while I was dressing. I was afraid he might stay for the evening, so I told him about you.
You told him?
I said that you and Rosalie were engaged to be married.
Oh,
and
so...
And, monsieur, he insists we get married Friday in the Marais Chapel. He's going to provide my dowry.
You think he suspects you, Josephine?
I know he does. Darling, you must leave at once and never return.
Leave you and Rosalie to the mercy
we'll
of
We'll lie our way out of it. I'll tell him my lover did not like to be rushed and quit me.
And he'd believe it just like that?
Of course.
Never. Never, Rosalie. No, that's not the answer. That's not even sensible. Darling, sooner or later we'd have to take our chances and run away. Why not now?
Run away? Where? How?
To Spain. He'd never find us in Spain.
I have no passport. I couldn't even leave the country. And as long as I'm in France, he'd find me and drag me back.
We'd find a way to leave the country. Oh, Spain is lovely at this time of year. Beautiful. The trees are heavy with lilac bloom. And you'd like Madrid, Josephine. It's like another world.
Madrid? If only...
If only what? If only you've the courage, we'll leave at once. Pack a few things quickly, and we'll hire a coach to take us to the border.
Tonight. Tonight, Pierre. Tonight.
Suitcase is closed, my darling. Where's your coat?
In this closet.
Oh, let's do hurry.
Lovely coat, isn't it?
Everything looks lovely on you.
Listen.
What is it?
My husband's footsteps in the hall.
I waited for him and he never showed up.
That's a pity, Rosalie. And I had such pleasant wedding plans.
Here, quickly hide in the closet. Take my coat and suitcase with you.
Of course.
Here, take it.
Don't be frightened, darling.
Madame hasn't been feeling well and she lay down, monsieur.
Well, she's probably lonely. I'll cheer her up. Josephine, I'm glad to see you looking well. Rosalie told me you were ill.
I had a bad headache.
What's that?
Nothing. August, I heard nothing.
In your closet. I heard something drop.
What could drop in a closet?
I don't know. You're better acquainted with your wardrobe than I am.
Of course, my lord.
You've so many headaches lately. Come, my dear, you'd best lie down and rest.
Of course, whatever you say, my lord.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
I hope I didn't disturb your plans for the evening, but the evening began to pall, so I returned home. Sometimes my friends can prove themselves quite dull. I was thinking of you and your beauty, and I was worried about you.
Worried about me? In what way, August?
Oh, in the last 2 weeks, two of my friends have told me that they've seen you walking down the street alone, unchaperoned.
Have they?
Not that I listen to idle chatter, my dear. I don't. You know that.
People talk. They have so little else to do.
Naturally, I understand that. But then, a very close friend of mine was at the Café Grenald a few days ago. He, has told me something that rather puzzled me. You look a little pale, my dear.
My headache.
Naturally, your headache. He said he was sitting in the café and he noticed a woman who looks remarkably like you walk in and sit at a corner table.
A woman who looked like me?
She sat for a while all alone. Later, a man, a young man, joined her. He sat by her side. He called her Josephine, your name. Remarkable that a woman who looks like you should have the same name as you.
Yes, it is remarkable. Quite coincidental.
That's what I thought, coincidental. I might even have thought that woman was you, if I didn't know better. Know that you're a dutiful wife, my dear.
Of course, August.
For a little while, believe me, I was rather worried. I began to think about the habits and customs of country women. And putting that together with your temporary restlessness lately... Well, for a while, my dear, I thought perhaps in your moments of weakness you had perhaps acquired an admirer.
Please, August.
But naturally you haven't?
No, I haven't.
Then when I walked in your room just now and I saw you looking so nervous, flushed, for a second I thought perhaps your, shall we say, admirer was here in this room with you.
Did you?
It was just a passing thought. Naturally, knowing you've a headache, I realized that the flushed expression comes from that.
Yes, it does.
Then again, when I heard that peculiar clatter in the closet, a strange idea was born. I thought perhaps your friend, the friend you met at the cafe, might be hiding in the closet. You look pale, Josephine.
Do I?
Is someone hiding in the closet?
No.
I naturally will take your word. If someone is in that closet, my dear, I should be forced to protect your honor and do away with it. Would you swear to me now on the Bible that there is no one hiding in the closet?
Please, August, put away that dueling pistol.
Then you are prepared to swear before God on the Holy Bible that no one is hiding in that closet?
Yes, August.
Ring for your maid, my dear.
Why?
I said ring for her.
Yes, my lord.
Now, fetch me your Bible. You have your Bible in the room, my dear, haven't you?
Yes, my lord, it's right here at my bedside.
Put your left hand on it. That's right. And swear on the Holy Bible there is no other man in this room besides myself.
I swear there is no other man in this room besides yourself, my lord.
My mind is much relieved. Much relieved.
You rang for me, madame?
I did, Rosalie. Do you know where Monsieur de Gorenflot lives?
The mason, monsieur?
Yes, the mason, monsieur. I want to write a little note to him, and I want you to deliver it at once. Fetch me paper and a quill, Josephine.
Yes, my lord, I have a quill right here. Here's paper.
Ah, that's just the thing. You've learned to sharpen quills quite well, my love. Dear Monsieur Gorenflot, I am writing to you because...
Yes, that's what happened on that fatal Tuesday night. I perjured my soul, and I've paid for it. How little did I realize how much I had to pay. Rosalie left the room and delivered the note as she was bidden. My lord and I were left alone. He bade me retire to bed as I looked poorly and said that he personally would remain with me until my headache left. I assured him my health was much improved, but he would not have it so. I retired to bed and he sat by my side until...
Monsieur Marais, Monsieur Gorenflot is here.
Come in, Gorenflot.
I've done as you bid me, monsieur. I've brought the cement and the paving tools.
Good work, Gorenflot. Come, bring them in here.
In here, monsieur? In madame's room?
Yes, yes, in here.
Why, August? Why?
Rosalie, go to bed, girl, and get a good night's sleep. You don't have to linger around any longer.
Yes, sir.
Monsieur Gorenflot, do you see that closet in the corner?
Yes, my lord.
I wish you to cement it up. The sight of it affects my wife quite strangely.
August!
Please, my dear.
But, August!
You swore to me there was no one in it, my dear beloved wife. And I believe you. Surely there's no harm in sealing up such an offensive, ugly closet. I'll have another one built for you.
But my clothes...
I shall buy you new ones. What are you waiting for, Monsieur Gorenflot?
My lord, at this hour of the night...
You are sure you want me to do this now, monsieur?
Wait till morning, my lord.
I am positive, absolutely positive, my poor Gorenflot. Go to work at once. I will not wait. I am a man of whims. Strange, interesting
whim. August knew that my lover hid in there. I didn't think he'd have the heart to go through with what he had intended. So at first I just sat quietly by and watched. Gorenflot laid first one row of bricks, and then another, and then a third, and then a fourth. Pierre was afraid by now. He preferred quick, certain death to slow starvation, and he began knocking on the door and calling out.
Please, let me out.
Gorenflot, petrified, stopped, and he said...
Monsieur Marais.
Go ahead, Monsieur Gorenflot. There's no one in that closet. My wife has assured me there's no one there.
August! August!
And I'm within my rights, Monsieur Gorenflot. Proceed at once. Proceed!
As you say, Monsieur Marais.
Please, open
it. Yes, as he says, he was within his rights to do exactly as he pleased. The fifth row slowly fell in place, and the sixth.
And then I knew that August meant to see that night's work finished. The 7th. I cried. I wept. I tore at his coat. I pleaded. I entreated. It was all no use at all. Small beads of perspiration shone on Gorenflot's forehead as he worked. And the rows kept going up, one by one, until morning, when the entire job was done.
Thank you, Monsieur Gorenflot. Here is 2,000 francs for your work and your silence. My wife's good name must not be bantered about in public.
Thank you, monsieur. Thank you.
How can you be such a beast?
Come, come, my dear. Dry your eyes. The offending closet is sealed up.
August, there's a man inside. There is. How can you deny it?
You're lying to me, Josephine. You swore there wasn't. I must believe an oath taken on a Bible.
Oh. Listen, don't you hear him?
Yes, but my ears deceive me.
He's calling out. August, please take my life. But don't let him die in there.
Ah, my dear, there's no one in that closet. Remember what you said? Ring for your maid, Josephine.
My maid? Rosalie!
I said ring for her, not cry out for her.
Of course I'll ring for her. August, be human. Please be human.
I've been more than human, Josephine. I've been godly. I've accepted your word as absolute truth. Don't come in, Rosalie. I shall see you at the doorway. Stay right out here, my dear. That's right. Instruct the butler and all the servants that Madame and I will remain in her room for at least a month. And our meals are to be served by my private valet.
Yes, monsieur.
And otherwise, we're not to be disturbed by anyone.
Yes, monsieur. For 30 days and 30 nights. For 30 days and 30 nights, I heard that tapping on the wall. His cries. His moans, his words, his pleas, I heard them there. August was stone, completely stone. He didn't care. He just sat and watched me. Watched my face, enjoyed my terror. Fed me horror, waiting daily for the cries that issued out. August, how can you? How can you be like this? He's there, Pierre. He's there. He's behind the wall.
My dear, you must be ill.
Listen to him. He's dying there. Each day his strength grows less. And as he dies, I must die too. August, please, in heaven's name, be kind, be merciful. Forgive me. Let him go.
There's no one there. I'll call the maid. You'll need her care.
No one there. Listen. The tapping stopped. It stopped. Murderer! You pig! You beast! You killed him!
You're ill, my dear. So ill, poor girl. Come in.
Tell me, my lord.
Please call the doctor, Rosalie. My wife is ill. She's going away for a long rest. A very long rest.
So I sit here in this rest home, listening to the feeble tapping inside my head. The same feeble tapping I heard on the closet wall of my bedroom at home. That same feeble tapping. Will it never stop?
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the story of the Niche of Doom. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Well, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. And remember, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/terror1970. Or you can find me on Instagram at Radio Show Nerd. I also have a YouTube channel, Terror Radio. Please check it out. Like and subscribe. Share the videos. Will be highly appreciated. Again, this is your host, Keith, better known as the Radio Show Nerd, signing off.